Somewhere between cinema and visual art lies the art form of video installation. It's a medium that many Indigenous artists across the world are using to address big themes like human rights and environmental and cultural security. Some of the best is currently being showcased in Adelaide at the Sam Stagg Museum of Art as part of the Adelaide Film Festival. The exhibition, Stop the Gap, Indigenous Art in Motion, features artists from Canada, the US, New Zealand and Australia. A central feature is a new specially commissioned work, filmed in 3D by the director-cinematographer Warwick Thornton. Annie Haswell went along to Stop the Gap to have a look and to meet some of the exhibiting artists and the curator.
I'm standing in an end room of the Sam Stagg Gallery, a room that I'm guessing could have as many as 20 works of art hung on the walls. But at the moment, it's home to just one huge video installation. There's a lot to take in here. Across the main wall, two parallel projected moving images of a riverbank travel in opposite directions, and two soundtracks compete from either end of the room. It's the work of USA artist Alan Michelson.
The form of the image is based on a wampum belt, which is one of our traditions. Wampum are tiny cylindrical beads made of clamshells, and the beads are either white or purple, and they were woven into literally belts that had graphics on them that were metaphorical, or that they were symbolic. And the belt that I took this from was called the two-row wampum, and it consisted of two purple rows on a white field, two parallel purple rows, one above the other. And I translated that format of two purple rows into two purple and white rows of video. So I took a video and turned it into this this sort of digital wampum belt. And the belt itself was expressing an agreement that we made with the Dutch when they first entered our territory, supposedly in 1613. And the idea was, the metaphor was, we're both on the same river, the river of life, and you in your sailing ships, or sailing ship, we in our canoe. So let's agree to not try to get in each other's way, or try to get in each other's boat, or overturn the other one. Let's try to be equal and respectful, and chart parallel paths. You know, so that was the basis. And I shot an actual river up at Six Nations Reserve, where my people are from, which is in southern Ontario. I'm American, but the reserve is, you know, that's the complications of being native and borders being formed in territories that weren't bordered before in the same way. So I shot both sides of the Grand River, and our territory there was based on a land grant of 6 miles on either side of this Grand River, to show the way the river was both linking and dividing our community, the Six Nations Reserve community, from the non-native, the sort of white Canadian side. So I shot both sides of the river and then had them moving, and you can see in opposite directions from each other, and also recorded our elders speaking about the river, and then also recorded the Canadian tour boat captain who does a dinner cruise on the river, and have them speaking at the same time, sort of at cross purposes.
Can you explain the process from idea to coming up with this?
Yes, this actually grew out of a conversation I had with my knowledgeable cousin Rick Hill, who's one of our cultural experts. And he was talking about how the river used to facilitate our traditional culture, because we did use canoes and we did locate our villages near bodies of water or rivers. So the river being this sort of highway of relationship and sociability, turning into this boundary, turning into a fence when the Europeans came and we were having to move and losing our land and things like that. So I just kept thinking about that, and then I thought about the belt, and I made this connection. I'd already worked in a panoramic format, and I like panoramic format because it's something that you can't just sort of take in one bite. and I liked its sort of enveloping aspects, and also the fact that it was more than one point of view is sort of implied by something that wide. You have to sort of walk along it. And so all these things started occurring to me that I could, once I made the leap between the belt and the two rows and the video, I pretty much had the piece.
What are the strengths of video installation and being able to use other media as well when it comes to representing an idea?
Video affords a certain documentary aspect. I used to be a painter, but then it's like the question of style always comes up. And so I've been making photo-based works for some time now, and video-based works since 2001. I made my first video then. So I like the fact that it is a sort of good recorder of things and documentary, but it's also it can be used the way I used it here, which is hopefully also painterly and more abstract. So I like those possibilities. Also, the use of being able to bring time into into work, it does very beautifully, and it also allows the possibility of sound and the possibilities of simultaneously being documentary and sort of realistic, and then doing something more abstract with it at the same time. I like that. I like things being grounded in reality, but then transformed.
I'm Brenda Croft, and I'm a Gurindji Malian Mutpura woman on my father's side and Anglo-Australian on my mum's, and I'm the curator of Stop the Gap International Indigenous Art in Motion.
Yeah, it's an interesting art form, video installation. What made you decide to pull all these pieces together?
I started off as an artist long before I was a curator, and I worked in photography, so I've always had interest in visual kind of representation in that way. And, you know, I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, so I loved film, and I've really been interested for quite a long time in how artists are using moving image work and installation work within a contemporary art setting. And contemporary Indigenous art is very much a part of that. So I did an exhibition on Michael Riley, a wonderful Wiradjuri Gamilaroi artist who was a photographer, filmmaker, in 2006. And so this felt like a kind of natural extension of that. And working with people from countries such as the US, Aotearoa, and Canada, long-term curatorial colleagues as well as artists whose work I've been interested in and wanted to know more about. So
it's a challenging form, though, isn't it? Because it requires a lot of space from a gallery's point of view.
Uh-huh, and particularly if the sound plays a large part in, and with all of these works, except one work by Lisa Rehana, which is a silent film, the sound has this kind of leaching and bleeding effect throughout the gallery, and also you're looking at different things because it is moving. You're seeing different things out of the corner of your eye depending where you are in the gallery space. So your sight and sound can be somewhat overloaded. And each of the works, they have different durations, but, you know, it kind of expects a commitment from whoever's looking.
And here's another video work which dominates an entire wall. Seen through a sheer fabric screen studded with points of light, a tired and angry-looking woman scrubs away at a suburban footpath and shouts out the names of women. It's the work of Canadian artist Rebecca Belmore.
Rebecca's from Canada, and her work is called The Named and the Unnamed, and it's based on, it's an installation that incorporates a moving image documentation of a performance that she did in 2002 in downtown Vancouver in a really kind of rough area, and a lot of women were disappearing off the streets, and some of them were prostitutes and some were drug addicts, but not all, and they were mainly First Nations women, and nobody seemed to care. They just kept disappearing, and everyone thought there's got to be a John, a customer who's doing this. Rebecca's performance called Vigil was, she wrote the names of many of the women up her arms and along her body, and she did this kind of cleansing, scrubbing, very kind of visceral performance through parts of the cities and parts of the city where the women had disappeared from, and she ends up nailing herself, not her skin, but this dress she's wearing to these power poles and then ripping the dress off, and so the sound of it tearing is almost like skin tearing. And she's yelling out the women's names. So it's about giving voice back to those women who disappeared, having some kind of memorial to them. So it's a very hard work, and at the end of it she's exhausted, you're exhausted, and you really feel what she was doing with that. And then you turn around, you've got someone like Nova Paul, and her really languid, beautiful three-colour separation work, which is very domestic and really, it's kind of otherworldly, and it reminds you of another time. It's almost like you've slipped into the layers of this... this person's very kind of domestic experience, so it's a really different work. And I like how you turn around and from one to the other there's, you know, something quite different.
There's this bloke and he's on a neon cross and he's floating in the middle of the desert in 3D. He's been crucified and he looks a bit bored.
Stranded is a 7-minute moving image work by filmmaker Warwick Thornton. He appears as the central figure, a crucified cowboy. The cross turns slowly in a luminous but somehow ominous desert landscape with a definitely ominous soundtrack. Thornton says for him, the making of this moving image artwork has been a new experience.
I was kind of looking for ideas that would be incredibly creative and give me a whole lot of freedom that don't take 6-7 years to make, which is, you know, the kind of the works that I usually do with feature films and that. And I was sort of offered by Adelaide Film Festival to do whatever I want for this place. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. This is something that I can do that doesn't have to have a narrative, doesn't have to have a story. I don't have to explain anything to the audience. I can create a set of images that are very, you know, there's a lot of emotion and motive into them. But then an audience can actually create their own story, and they can make up their own mind if I'm like a protagonist or an antagonist or anything like that there. So that's kind of where it came from.
So working with a video installation, as you say, it gives you a lot of freedom and there's a time factor. What other things are good about working in that medium?
It's being able to actually really focus on image and be able to just create emotion and being able to leave it at that. Not having to explain it is something very exciting to me. I spend my life explaining every film. With Samson Delilah, I did 1 billion interviews and I explained that film back to front, even though the people had seen it and they got their own idea what it was about. And it had to be set out, and I had to everything. A went to B and B went to C. And with this one, I don't care. it's so beautiful. It's fun. And it is a sort of venting of creativity. And having the freedom to just enjoy it.
What about the use of 3D? Was that what led to that decision?
You know, it's something that I've kind of been scared of, and something this small. You know, 3D is such a pain in the neck to work with.
In what way? How does it work?
Lethargic. You know what I mean? It takes you 2 hours to change a shot, whereas you know, in normal cinema, it takes me 5 seconds to change a shot. You know, it's incredibly slow and laborious, and it has rules. And obviously the rules are there to be broken. And I don't like rules with cameras. And it's just technology. You know, it gives you this sort of visual feast, and it's generally, it's quite exciting when it works, but it's incredibly hard to get that to happen. So I've been quite afraid of it. And you know, something like this here, which is only, you know, it's on an infinite loop, but it's only 15 minutes long, but it cycles. It was the perfect opportunity to do that, and to use something in that sense in the visual arts. You know, it's only used by high end Hollywood films because they're the only people who can afford to do it. Because it's so painfully long and laborious and costs a fortune. But to do something smaller like this here and using that sort of visual idea as a creation, a creative emotion in a sense, was, you know, it kind of gelled really well with the crucifixion.
I know my favourite bit is when the cross sweeps around and you feel as though it's going to hit you across the side of the head. What about you? What's your favourite part of it?
Yeah, for me, interesting. I'll give you a little sneak preview of what I think it's about. But for me, you know, that guy on the cross is what we look at. But there's something more important in that image. And there's a sequence there where there's a little bit of water underneath him, a small water hole, a little rock hole. You know, it's only a couple of meters wide, and that for me is the life giver. That little rock hole has just as many stories as the Bible, has just as many songs as Christians have hymns. It has its own creation. It is the holder of life, as in its water in the desert. That's the giver of everything is water. And it's an interesting concept, because you go instantly to the cross and you instantly are this bloke on the cross, but there's actually something just as powerful and just as meaningful that people don't recognise, which is that small bit of water underneath. And that's the indigenous side of us and me.
So has anybody come up with an explanation of what they think it's about that has intrigued you or has surprised you?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been lots of gorgeous ones. The poison of the land, because on the cross there's a skull and crossbones, which is obviously, the sign for poison. And people are saying, the sort of Christianity is poison of the land. And, Christianity has caused a lot of trouble in indigenous communities. A lot of people have lost their language and their lore and their songs and their stories purely because of Christianity, because that was completely wiped out. Christianity is very much a colonizer, and it gets rid of all, it's destroyed so many cultures and languages around the world. So people have come up with those, the poisoning of the land, the poisoning of the culture, and all sorts of wonderful, wonderful stories, yeah. And every single one of them is right, because that is that person's personal journey and their decisions and their makeup of the story, and I love that. It's kind of like the interaction between audience, because with cinema the interaction is that you were told what happens and you just sit there, eat your popcorn and dribble, and you walk out and you know exactly what happened, whereas this here, you don't know what's happening, you make it up for yourself, and that's much more interactive and much more exciting.
The filmmaker Warwick Thornton speaking about his work Stranded, currently showing at the Sam Stagg Museum of Art in Adelaide as part of the exhibition Stop the Gap, International Indigenous Art in Motion. Annie Hastwell also spoke to the curator of the exhibition, Brenda L. Croft, and to visiting USA artist Alan Michelson. Stop the Gap is on until the 21st of April.